Ma'am, you are?
My name is Marisha. I'm a Sedora Daly.
Okay. And can you spell your last name for me?
S-C-H-O-T-T.
Ms. Schott, you may proceed.
Counsel, what we have here is my client, Joan Phillips, who was negligently injured by the acts of two Douglas County deputies in the course of executing a lawful arrest warrant on a child. And because the arrest devolved into grabbing the child's clothes and ripping her fingers from a doorknob and throwing her to the ground, the deputies claim that that was a battery, and the negligent act as to my client arose out of the battery. And the trial court agreed and found that the county had sovereign immunity, or immunity under Section 13-910. And we take issue with that. Taking the long-range view, a ruling like that just leads or opens the door to absurd results. We have a police officer who touches someone that they're trying to arrest.
Do we already have some law in this area?
The cases that I have found have all involved the person that's actually being arrested claiming that they were battered by the police officer. And it's completely distinguishable here. We have
What about the City of Crawford case?
I'm not sure which one that is right here.
Well, maybe I'm making things up. I thought that was pertinent to this case.
Well, aside from
Britain, you all are calling it Britain.
Oh, okay.
I'm sorry. I couldn't remember Britain.
Britain, of course. And that is one case I wanted to address.
What about Britain?
Thank you. I think the trial court completely missed the boat on Britain because
the trial court or this court?
The trial court, of course. The takeaway from the trial court's opinion was that the key element is the intent of the person. And in this case, the county is claiming that the intent was to commit a battery. And aside from that being absurd, that everyone trying to make an arrest is intending to batter someone, the quote was taken out of context. In that case, there was a question as to whether there was a battery, and then the police officer had been charged with a crime and pled self-defense, and the argument was, well, there wouldn't be a finding of a battery because I have this affirmative defense. And the court said, no, you look at whether there's a battery, not whether there was intent or there would actually be some defense to it later. And it simply wasn't just look at the intent of the person. And that shouldn't be the standard anyway.
So you're saying the lesson in Britain is not only to look at intent in establishing if there was or wasn't a battery.
Right. And to look at whether there was a battery first. And then the question of intent, if it's raised through an affirmative defense, it would be addressed later, but it wouldn't be addressed in the first instance deciding if you had a battery or not.
Well, let me see if I can put the inquiry in the context of some of the facts here. Is there a battery? Was there a battery on the juvenile?
I think it could be interpreted as that, yes.
If there was a battery, when did it commence?
I imagine when the deputy grabbed the little girl's shirt.
When was your client injured?
Before that. My client had gotten a call from the deputies asking for assistance to get the little girl out of the building to avoid.
So if there's a battery, your client was knocked? Does that seem to be the knocked, a fair description, an undisputed fact?
Right, they knocked into her, knocked her down, injured her.
Prior to the deputies grabbing the shirt, is that correct?
Correct.
Were they in pursuit of the juvenile?
They had started running after her. The juvenile
Maybe that's not in dispute as a fact. Is that right?
So are you focusing then on arises out of and not really the battery? If you're talking about the sequence of events and the timing, and I understood you to say that the plaintiff was knocked down before the deputy grabbed the shirt of the girl to be arrested. Is that what you're saying?
Yes, that's true. She was knocked down, and then they caught the girl.
So you're saying, so are you suggesting that even if there was a battery, it didn't, the injury to your client didn't arise out of that battery?
Well, we don't, no, we believe it's separate. They don't have to be considered together. We have the battery, which had certain intent directed toward the little girl. And then we have the negligence. And I think different standards apply. There's the battery, which all the cases have involved the person being arrested. And then we also have negligence cases where innocent bystanders are allowed to sue a political subdivision for their injuries. And there's
in
a case...
In this state?
Yes, Your Honor. Okay. The Lee case is the one that comes to mind. That was a car chase that predated the statute. And the court said there is no doubt that in Nebraska and in other jurisdictions, the duty of law enforcement officers to apprehend violators must be balanced with the duty of care to the general public.
Our case is different?
The Phillips case, Your Honor?
My question is, our car case is somehow different than pursuit, the way pursuit was done in this case, which does not involve a car.
I believe they are now, because there's the statute that specifically makes the government entity liable, but back then, before the statute was adopted, no, I think the same principle applies.
So the principle that you're invoking is this correct, or is this the right vocabulary, that officers attempting to make an arrest, right, have a privilege of effecting that arrest so long as they do it reasonably, but if they do it unreasonably, it becomes a battery. Is that a fair statement of your understanding of the law? They have a privilege until they overdo it.
Well, I mean, my focus is not at all on how they did the arrest as far as the child, if they battered the child or not.
Okay.
I'm talking about the third-party bystander, and I think the duty remains the same. They need to exercise due care to protect the public.
Okay.
And, you know, certainly I think they overreacted and committed a battery on this child, but
they need to be reasonable throughout their conduct. Is that what you're saying? And therefore it includes being reasonable vis-a-vis bystanders.
Absolutely, they should be reasonable.
Is that what you're saying?
I would agree with that.
And what's your best authority for that? Car chase prior to the statute?
The Lee case. And I don't know that there's any authority that they don't have to be reasonable. I don't know what would give them free rein to act unreasonably. They've got this battery exception that applies during the arrest just to the person being arrested, but that I don't know how that would give them free rein to run into bystanders.
And what's the relevance of the series of statutes beginning with 28.14.12 about using reasonable force to arrest? Are those statutes relevant to our analysis?
Well, here again, Your Honor, that would focus on the child and whatever her claim might be. But we're looking at this strictly as a negligence claim. This is somehow been recast to look at the battery as far as the child. The county did that. I think the trial court went along with it. But we're actually trying to look at our negligence case, which is the police or the deputies did not act reasonably toward my client, and they owed her a duty to not injure her in the course of executing a legal arrest.
And is 28 14.14 relevant to your analysis? vis-à-vis Ms. Phillips being a bystander?
I think that the duty of the police officers to act reasonably would apply in that she was injured while they were acting unreasonably towards someone else.
Thank you.
My time is about to be up if anyone has any questions.
Thank you very much. Ms. Connolly, good morning.
Good morning. Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court, I'm Sandra Connolly. I'm a Deputy County Attorney on behalf of Douglas County and the Sheriff, Timothy Dunning, in this case. The District Court, the trial court in this case, they considered the pleadings, they considered the evidence in the light most favorable to the appellant. And the court determined that a battery occurred, and I think, as counsel has indicated, they're not really arguing that a battery occurred on this minor student. The court also determined that these deputies intended the offensive conduct resulting in the battery, and that the appellant's claim arose out of this battery. It was a continuous chain of events.
When did the battery, if there was one, commence?
The intent, which the case law reflects and that the district court relied on from Britton v. City of Crawford, the key element is whether the actor intended the conduct. As soon as the sheriff deputies, the conduct in having to chase after this minor who was resisting arrest, the material facts of the case show that the sheriff deputies.
Is a chase?
They had to pursue this particular student. They arrived at this alternative school on an immediate custody.
So you're saying at the time they're chasing, the battery has commenced?
Their intent to grab this student who ran back into the school. Their intent to apprehend her
and they're
intending to batter. I mean, they don't know if she's just going to stop and put her hands up. They're just intending to batter her at that point.
Well, they're intending to make harmful offensive.
That they're intending to batter her at that point in time?
They're intending to grab her. I think if we look at the definition of battery, which was cited in Britton v. City of Crawford, it's an actual infliction of an unconsented injury upon or unconsented contact with another.
That's the completed batter.
Correct. Basically, and then like I said, as the case goes on in Britton v. City of Crawford, they're discussing how the key element is intent. They intended the conduct. The sheriff deputies did intend, as soon as the student, the minor that they were there to take into custody, she resisted arrest. She ran back into the school. The deputies pursued her with the intent to grab her, to take her into custody.
Did they intend to arrest her, or did they intend to grab her?
Well, they were trying to take her into custody. Obviously, they would like to do that peacefully, but that's not what happened.
I'm trying to focus on you. Your emphasis seems to be on intent, so that I would like to know what they intended to do because of your focus.
Well, they intended to make physical contact with the student.
They did.
And they did.
And is it your position that they intended to exercise unnecessary force in getting a hold of her?
Certainly not. That's not what's going through their heads.
How does it get to a battery?
They're in the course of their duties, but the chain of events here is what you have to look at. If the student had stopped and allowed the deputies to take her into custody, it might be a different situation.
They would intend to have physical contact. That would be privileged conduct, wouldn't it?
Correct.
Because however, the officers, unlike the rest of us, people bump into folks, they're able to make a little more contact than the rest of us, right? They're privileged to do so until such time as it becomes unreasonable and it morphs into a battery. Is that a fair understanding?
I think that is fair.
Okay.
I'd like to get us up out of the weeds for just a minute.
Sure.
I'd like to hear your explanation for the policy purpose underlying the exception under the Political Subdivision Tort Claims Act for battery. What's the purpose of that exception?
Well, the purpose of it is to protect the sovereign immunity for instances like this. You've got law enforcement that have to, in the course of their duties, do things. Each situation could be different. When they go to take a minor into custody, it could be peaceful and they just go pick her up and everything's fine. But in this case, and in other cases, perhaps where a law enforcement officer has to actually shoot a suspect. They don't enter into that situation intending to shoot that suspect. These deputies didn't enter into the situation intending to have to take the student down with force. But that's what happened. That's what they were faced with. This student resisted the custody.
They were intending to make physical contact in a reasonable manner?
Certainly.
For which
certainly
they
would
be privileged. Is that what they intended?
Once the student ran back into the school, they were going to have to grab her. She continued to resist even after they ran into the school. She grabbed onto a door. These officers had to fill out use of force reports for this particular incident. And I think that shows that a battery occurred. They had to go the extra step. It wasn't a normal custody. It wasn't a normal taking this child into custody. It reached another level because she continued to resist.
Did this court define battery pretty broadly in Britain?
In the appellant's brief, and what they also argued at the trial court level was that the deputy's conduct wasn't unlawful, so it can't be a battery. Well, that's inconsistent with other cases where the battery exception is considered for legally justified acts. So I think the definition used in Britain v. City of Crawford, they discussed both. They discussed the actual infliction of the unconsented contact with another. They discussed the unlawful terminology that the appellant, they want to hang their hat on. But then they also discussed the restatement of torts, second of torts, section 13, which discusses intending to cause harmful or offensive conduct with the person of the other or a third person or an imminent apprehension in a harmful contact with the person directly or indirectly results. That is a broader definition. Not all jurisdictions include that third person terminology. In this court,
what do our statutes say as to the third person?
I don't know.
Is 28.14.14, does that address the third person?
I'm sorry, I did not even look at that statute. It wasn't cited in any, it hasn't been brought up at any point in this case.
What would be stepping back again, as Justice Stacey has invited us to do here from time to time on transferred intent? What is the virtue, if there were a battery, of transferring the intent?
Certainly, the trial court discussed this, and we also discussed it in our brief, that this would be a case of transferred intent, that the intent that the deputies had towards the minor child could be transferred to the appellant in this case. It was a continuous chain of events. We definitely believe that this arose out of the battery. The deputies were in the course of pursuing the student, taking her into custody with force when the appellant claimed she was knocked down and injured. It's one continuous chain of events. There's no way to separate the appellant's claim from the battery. And as the statute for the PSTCA states, it's any claim that arises out of a battery. And we believe that the appellant's claim falls within that context.
Was the use of force reasonable? Is that a question of fact?
I don't think it's necessarily a question of fact. I think it's just looking at whether a battery occurred. Did they intend the conduct? Yes, they did.
That's an answer to a different question. Under the statutes, and the cases under the statutes, the police are able to use reasonable force
certainly.
In effecting an arrest.
Certainly, but that doesn't need to be taken.
Were they using reasonable force, or is that a question of fact?
Yes, I believe they were. I mean, no one was disciplined for the actions they took that day. They filled out the use of force reports. I think it's important to note that...
Is that a question of fact? Is excessive force, use of force, reasonable force, are those ordinary questions of fact?
I think not necessary for this particular claim, because in Britain v. City of Crawford, and what the trial court discussed was that you don't need to determine the liability, the ultimate liability that might take place. For this claim, you just have to determine whether a battery occurred, whether there was intent, and whether the claim arises out of the battery. And we believe that it does, and I ask that you affirm the decision of the trial court.
So your position is that you all's clients committed a battery?
Our position is that a battery occurred, even if it's legally justified, which we believe it was, that it occurred and that the appellant's claim arose out of that battery.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Do we have any time for rebuttal?
She is over.
There is no time for rebuttal. That concludes arguments for the day. The court is adjourned, and you are excused.